Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, West African nations scramble to contain an outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus. In Liberia, there was this warning from the chief medical officer.
Limit as much as possible direct contact with body fluids of infected person or dead person. Avoid physical contact such as handshake, kissing, etc.
And as peace talks between South Sudan's warring factions resume in Addis Ababa, we'll be hearing from a top official from the ruling SPLM.
What we are now waiting for is monitoring and verification mechanism to make sure that the two parties really stop fighting each other.
Also on our program, can tablet computers make up for a shortage of teachers in Zambia's schools? Stay with us.
Top story.
West African nations scrambled on Tuesday to contain an outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus, suspected of having killed at least 59 people in Guinea, with others reported to be showing symptoms of the disease in neighbouring Sierra Leone and Liberia. The World Health Organization, the WHO, said a total of 86 suspected cases, including the deaths, have been reported in southeastern Guinea near the border with Sierra Leone and Liberia. Laboratory tests have confirmed 13 cases of Ebola in Guinea so far. In a moment, we'll be talking to WHO headquarters in Geneva. But first, we go to Liberia, where a National Emergency Health Task Force has been reactivated. From Monrovia, Julius Kanuba reports.
Liberia's health authorities were very swift to announce the outbreak of Ebola in the northern region of the country. The country shares borders with Guinea, where the virus has been reported to have killed over 50 people. Dr. Brenis Dan is Liberia's chief medical officer.
The Ministry of Health and Social Welfare would like to inform the general public about an outbreak of a deadly hemorrhagic fever, Ebola, in neighboring Guinea. The disease is reported to be spreading along the border with Liberia, specifically in the communities and towns close to the Guinea towns of Kwekedu, Zerekore, Kisidugu, and Masenta.
According to Dr. Dan, the Ebola virus has left death toll in northern Liberia.
6 cases have been reported, of which 5 have already died. All the 6 suspected cases came from Guinea for treatment in hospitals in Foya and Zoza districts, Lupa County, Liberia.
Acting country representative of the World Health Organization, WHO, Dr. Peter Clement, said the organization is collaborating with Liberian health authorities to tackle the Ebola virus, which cannot be killed, but rather prevented.
All of us should be responsible, take the responsibility to prevent the spread of the disease. We need to improve the surveillance system to be able to identify these cases early, and to be able to provide the necessary support.
Liberia's chief medical officer, Dr. Brenis Dan, warned the Liberian public against close contact with a person or animal suspected of the virus.
Limit as much as possible direct contact with body fluids of infected person or dead person. Avoid physical contact such as handshakes, kissing, etc. Wash your hands with soap and water as frequently as possible. Avoid direct contact with animals such as fruit bats or monkeys, apes, and the consumption of their raw meat.
Liberia is currently on high alert as medical authorities warned about the spread of the virus. Victor Cie lives in the capital, Monrovia, and is extremely worried about coming in contact with an infected person.
Who knows that you come to the capital now, or who knows it's even in the capital, so we want to send out the message that Liberians should avoid shaking hands with people, wash their hands very well in the communities, wherever they eat. And they also say it comes from fresh meat, because we have our meat come from our rural areas to the city area. It's a threat for our nation.
That report was compiled by Julius Kanuba. Because the Ebola virus is so contagious and because there is no known cure or vaccine, containing the disease is of paramount importance. I asked Tariq Yashugovich, spokesman for the WHO in Geneva, what measures were being put in place.
The main measures that should be put in place include installation of isolation ward, because Ebola is highly contagious. So it is very important that patients are kept in the conditions that prevent transmissions to health workers and to their loved ones who come to visit them. Another thing is to trace the contacts of people who have been infected, so to get in touch with people who may have had been infected by being in contact. So we have to check on them, make sure that they don't develop symptoms. Another thing very important is to inform the population so they know how to recognize and how to protect themselves by washing hands, by being cautious when in contact with their relatives who may be infected. And also, it is important that there is a lab capacity in the country so we can analyze the samples and basically confirm the cases.
This virus was first spotted in what was then Zaire and in Sudan back in 1976. It's re-emerged almost annually ever since. How does the start of this outbreak compare to previous ones?
It is basically what we have seen in other countries, that it starts in the remote areas. And this is because the reservoir of a virus is an animal. So the first human infection passed through the contact with the infected animal. So this time around, we see that that was the case. We also know that some health workers were among first who were infected, like in other outbreaks. And this is because when sick people come to health facilities, health workers do not know that this is Ebola and it's so highly contagious, especially in contact with the blood and body fluids, so they get sick themselves. We also know that burial ceremonies are events that may lead to a lot of infection, because in many places in Africa, ceremonies include touching of a body of deceased. It's also important very much that practices of safe disposal of deceased persons is done in a way that transmission possibilities are limited.
Tariq Yashugovich, spokesman for the WHO in Geneva.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Mediated peace talks between South Sudan's government and rebels resumed in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa on Tuesday. In a separate development, Germany's Development Aid Minister Gerd Müller will be visiting South Sudan on Wednesday. My colleague Daniel Pels has been talking to Anne Itolo-Nado, Deputy Secretary General of the SPLM, South Sudan's ruling party, to get an insight into government thinking on the conflict. What role were political issues playing in it?
First of all, we are used to being a liberation movement or a resistance movement, and that has helped us to fight the war, negotiate peace. But we realized in the SPLM, after the independence, we needed to start the work for nation and state building. So we thought it was time to review our basic documents and make a roadmap for the restructuring and reorganization of SPLM.
And in what way has that led to this conflict that has erupted in December?
Reorganization of SPLM basically means democratic processes of electing leaders and representatives right from the grassroots, culminating in a national convention. In this national convention, the chairperson of SPLM is elected. That position is open for grabs. And it created a rift between the incumbent chairman and those who were contesting.
What are the economic, the social factors that made other people join them, setting up these militias?
In the South Sudan, part of the provision of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was to absorb armed groups, not under any particular command, but under the commands of warlords, but they are not necessarily members of SPLA.
Why was it so difficult, despite all the government efforts, to dissolve these militias and to disarm them?
First of all, the militias fight for their own individual interest. They don't fight for the interest of the state. So many of them have been absorbed while they still remain loyal to somebody else. If somebody is in the army, they only receive salary, but they are loyal to somebody. It's very difficult to know who can mobilize them.
What would you see as the way forward now to achieve a lasting peace in South Sudan?
When this conflict broke out, IGAD came back to us and offered to mediate. Under IGAD, the government and the SPLM in opposition led by Riek Machar, the former vice president of South Sudan, have signed a cessation of hostility agreement. What we are now waiting for is monitoring and verification mechanism to make sure that the two parties really stop fighting each other.
As far as the economic situation of the country is concerned, what impact is the conflict going to have, in particular now where South Sudan can import only small amounts of oil?
First of all, many people have lost their livelihoods. It means they'll have to depend on humanitarian assistance. But most importantly, the money that the government would have invested is now diverted to war.
What recommendations would you have to the international community and to the United Nations to end this conflict?
We see this as a wake-up call that at the time when we are starting our nation and state building, certain things went wrong and it's time for us to review them. We want them to support IGAD.
Anne Itilado, Deputy Secretary General of the SPLM.
Africa on the Move.
The manufacturers are heralding it as an education revolution. They're referring to a touchscreen tablet computer that is being used in some schools in Zambia. The aim is not just to introduce children to email and other tools of the digital age, but also to deploy technology as a means of compensating for a shortage of trained teachers, especially in rural areas. Kathy Sikombe has more on the story in this week's Africa on the Move.
Fruit and vegetable sets. In this lesson, you will learn to put objects into sets according to different criteria.
The touchscreen low-cost tablet computer can provide primary school lessons for grades 1 to 7, including early grades in 8 local languages as well as English. The ZeduPad costs €150 and uses batteries as well as solar power. Its thousands of lessons have multimedia sound and graphics covering the entire Zambian school syllabus as well as lesson plans for teachers.
Mr. Delicious has a delivery of fruit and vegetables today. What fruit and vegetables can you see?
The tablet was launched by iSchool, a Zambian online multimedia e-learning package for the Zambian school curriculum. Mono Mwenya, a senior teacher at iSchool, told me more about it.
We thought of the ZeduPad as a way of having access to quality education. So it has a lot of learning resources on it, some lesson plans for the teachers, interactive work for the children, a lot of books that they can read at their own time and even at home. Children love it. It talks back to them. The teachers enjoy teaching. Their planning is made easier. We've made planning for the teachers as well. The community is overwhelmed by the technology being used in the classroom. And it's just a wonderful thing that encourages both problem solving in the children, questioning, and a lot of learning.
Kalingalinga Primary School in Lusaka is one of the schools that has been using the ZeduPad since 2010. I went along to visit a grade 1 class with 50 students having lessons using the tablet.
Hello, hello children.
Hello, teacher.
Okay, so we are going to the next question now, right? We have seen the baby bear has eaten 4 sweets. Now this time, baby bear wants 7 sweets. Okay, so we are going to count 7 sweets.
Brenda Mubiana is a teacher who uses the ZeduPad in her lessons. I asked her to describe her experiences with it.
Most of the time I normally use group work. We are doing three activities in the same lesson, so pupils normally participate fully.
Juanita Sinkala is an 8-year-old grade 2 pupil.
ZeduPag is the best in the whole world. ZeduPag is what I love. It helps me work on the computer. It makes me go to school. I love ZeduPag.
That report was compiled by Kathy Sikombe. In Kenya, four civil rights groups are suing the government. They are demanding compensation for more than 5,000 women and girls who say they were sexually abused during post-election violence 7 years ago. The plaintiffs say the police were not properly trained to protect them. They also claim the police obstructed justice by failing to investigate allegations of sexual violence. James Shimanyula was in court in Nairobi for the start of the hearing.
The first witness to testify was Kenya National Commission on Human Rights Chief Executive Officer Patricia Nyaundi. She told the presiding judge Isaac Lenaola that the government had discriminated against victims of sexual violence despite evidence that they were abused by security officers. Shortly after the court session, I caught up with Muthoni Njuguna, the communications officer of one of the lobby groups, Coalition on Violence Against Women, COVO. She decried the government's reluctance to prosecute perpetrators of sexual violence during the 2007 ethnic clashes that resulted in sexual violence committed against more than 5,000 women.
There are two suspects at the ICC level, but on the ground there are people who actually did suffer, and the government has not yet acknowledged or come to the fore and actually acknowledged that these atrocities did happen. People were raped, people were mutilated, people underwent a lot of torture.
Explaining why it has taken long for the civil rights lobby groups to file the case against the government, Njuguna said,
"We were waiting for, first of all, the government to actually just do something about the cases that had been forwarded to them. 7 years later, they dropped over 5,000 cases. So we decided that we needed to take time to have something concrete to bring to the court."
Coalition on Violence Against Women Executive Director Joan Nyanyuki, a medical doctor, told DW the impact of sexual violence on the victim.
What happens to a sexual violence victim is first the physical trauma. But while that may heal, the psychological impact is long-lasting. The trauma of having been sexually violated, especially during conflict and violence, actually affects women and girls, even men, for life. So you find that while the physical signs may go away, the scars might go away, the impact in terms of their mental processing functions, their emotions, their judgment, even their outlook towards life and society changes completely.
One of the victims of sexual violence, Wambui, not her real name, and 30 years old, spoke of her ordeal during the post-election violence.
It was 30th December 2007. I was going to buy supper when I met three men. They asked me where I'm going. They knocked me down. They raped me.
Another 55-year-old woman in Nyambura, also not her name, relived her rape ordeal.
They started beating me. From there, I didn't know what they finished raping me. It was very pain. Those people were young. My mind was so bad. I was shaking. But now I'm okay because I went through the counselors. They counseled me, and I was crying all the time.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula.
Making a difference.
A cleft lip is a split in a person's upper lip, a cleft palate, a split in the roof of the mouth. These are conditions that some babies are born with. They occur together sometimes, but both can be treated by surgery. Left untreated, they can lead to feeding, speech and hearing problems. A cleft lip and palate is also perceived as unsightly and can also cause social and psychological difficulties. A surgeon in Abuja, Nigeria, is offering treatment free of charge. For sufferers, this really does make a difference, as Nonya Agaji reports.
Medical science has it that cleft lip and palate is a disease that a child is born with. It is a disruption in the development of the lip or palate that happens between 6th and 12th week of development of baby in the womb. It results to the inability of the lips to cover the teeth and also leads to speech disorder. Dr. Seidu Bello is a consultant oral and maxillofacial surgeon. He works with the State House Medical Center in Abuja and is also the founder and director of Cleft Care Foundation, Nigeria.
If the lips, usually the upper lip, if part of this segment fail to come together, we have cleft lip. If the palate, that's the roof of the mouth, has two halves from right and left, if they fail to meet at the center because of that disruption, then you have a cleft of the palate, which results in speech problems.
Ogechi Odi suffered from such experience.
I noticed that whenever I talk,
People tended to mock me. They made jokes about me, the way I talk, coupled with the hole between my nose and my mouth, that when I drink water, it comes out from my nose. I was really not feeling comfortable.
I was not really feeling comfortable.
Ogechi, now in her youth, says the deformity limits the potential of people.
Naturally, I am not feeling.
Naturally, I'm not timid, but somehow the cleft palate I had forced me into a kind of being timid. When I see people gather round, if they ask me a question, I cannot stand up to answer it, because I will be thinking that they'll ask me, "Hey, what did you say? I can't understand you." So I don't really talk with everybody, especially in a meeting or in a crowd. It's not as if I don't really know what to say, but I can't really express myself because of the way I talk.
Ogechi remained with the disorder until in 2012, when she heard on local television about a free surgery for everyone suffering from the disorder. She applied and went through a successful surgery. Today, she said, she has never been more happy.
It's not like a baby learning how to talk.
It's just like a baby learning how to talk. You will not imagine me doing that automatically, but I can assure you that it's not like before. And I don't really feel timid like I did before.
You
have to be willing to put.
Thanks to Dr. Seidu Bello's Cleft Care Foundation Nigeria, Ogechi Odi can now speak properly.
Can you imagine a situation where you wake up in the morning and somebody will call you and tell you that I'm happy? And doctor, she has now started going to school. She or he has not been going to school because he had facial deformity. And somebody will now tell you that, doctor, that my son is now very well.
That report was compiled by Nonya Agaji. Before we leave you here on Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories. West Africa was on high alert on Tuesday after Sierra Leone warned an Ebola outbreak ravaging Guinea may have crossed its borders. Five deaths in Liberia were being tested for the deadly virus. As stalled South Sudanese peace talks resume in Addis Ababa, a top official from the ruling SPLM has told this program they were waiting for a monitoring and verification mechanism. And we've also been hearing about a surgeon from Nigeria who has been treating people free of charge who were disfigured at birth. And then we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Don't forget, we're always interested in your comments on this programme. You can send a text message to +491609575951 0. That's +491609575951 0800 957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.